Good morning, Professor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you. Now, why is chocolate considered such a slice of heaven when we eat it? What's going on there?
Well, as you say, it all goes back to our ancient history. I mean, it was the Aztecs who originally described it, described a wonderful creation myth where their feathered serpent god stole the recipe from chocolate for heaven, brought it down to human beings, and then, of course, the serpent was punishment for giving something so slice of heaven to the plebeian masses. And so to make up for that deficit, the humans said, well, we're not going to upset the gods, so we'll only allow it that godlike humans can have chocolate. So, in fact, it turns out that they were able to get rid of that sin by making it entirely exclusive. And ever since that time, millennia ago, chocolate has been considered something very exclusive, and that's part of its appeal.
That's amazing. I'd never realized that there was almost this Promethean myth around the arrival of chocolate to the world.
Absolutely. And in every country that there are stories about how when chocolate arrived, it first of all became exclusive because it was in limited amounts, and then became, you know, really important as part of everyday culture. It became so important to, for example, Rome in the 17th century, that the Bishop of Rome decided that it wasn't sinful to break your fast by having drinking chocolate. So chocolate became officially not sinful in terms of the Roman Church at that time.
Look, when it's got the Pope seal of approval, it's hard to say no. What does chocolate actually do to the brain, though?
Well, the first thing it does, of course, is it gives the sensation of melt-in-the-mouth pleasure and sweetness in your mouth. And then there was a lovely study done some years ago where they took people and gave them, sat them in front of a movie, a sad movie, and then asked them how they felt at the end. But at the end of the movie, some of them got some chocolate, some of them got a glass of water, and of course, those people who got the chocolate felt a lot better about the movie than those who got the water. But the funny thing is, they felt a lot better about the movie about 5 minutes after they got the chocolate, and there's no way that anything contained in the chocolate or the chemicals would make the slightest difference to how your brain's going to function. So it's all about the sensation. They did the same study where they used bitter dark chocolate, which contains more of the exciting chemicals that might exist in chocolate. And you know what? They didn't feel any better with it. So it's all about the sensation and taste, the association of what chocolate means, the reminder of Valentine's Day, of Easter, of all of those things. And most of the comfort we get from it is because it's just a pleasurable reward and otherwise dull grey day.
So is there anything in chocolate? You mentioned some of the other chemicals that actually makes a difference to us.
Well, there is. I mean, one good example is that the major alkaloid in chocolate is something called theobromide. And theobromide is 98% chemically similar to caffeine. So it does give a kind of buzz, the same way that caffeine does, and it gives the kind of addiction the same way that caffeine does. Just to know, to remind people that how serious the chemicals in chocolate are, is if you were to feed chocolate to a dog or a cat, you would find that they would die very quickly because they can't break down this theobromide, and because of the levels of this that accumulate, it causes their illness and death in animals. So just to know, A, don't ever feed chocolate to dogs, and B, that's a good example to say, yes, chocolate definitely does contain seriously important chemicals. But whether they have any significant effect beyond that little bit of buzz in human beings, it really is questionable. There are some studies to say that, for example, people who eat chocolate more have greater intelligence. There's a lovely study that showed that Nobel Prize winners were more likely to be eating chocolate than the general population during the time that they were doing their research for their Nobel Prize. But that may have nothing to do with the fact that they were eating chocolate. It may be that the kind of stress they were under or other kind of things drove them to do it. So cause and effect really can't be taken.
So
but at least it's tasty.
So I was going to say, at the moment, when we see those studies saying that dark chocolate prevents heart disease, or we should be looking at correlation, not causation.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's very clear that, for example, if you take the kind of vast amounts of chocolate chemicals that are contained in most of these studies, you'd have to be an amazing chocoholic to do that, then sure, you can get modest changes in some parameters associated with heart disease, like cholesterol levels, blood pressure, pressure or levels of free radicals in your bloodstream. But again, you have to take large amounts of those. And there's another myth going around that eating chocolate actually helps you control your weight. And this is the so-called chocolate paradox. And in fact, what happens is that what has been described is that many people who are eating, if you look at studies, people who remain thinner tend to eat more chocolate than those who are getting fatter. But again, that may be due to the fact that people who are getting fatter are trying to cut down on things, and the first thing that goes against the wall when the health revolution comes, of course, is chocolate.
Very, very good point. Professor Thomas, thank you for chatting to us about some of the fun facts and myths about chocolate on a World Chocolate Day.
My pleasure.
Yes, if you are, we may not know a lot about the health benefits of chocolate, but we do know that it tastes great. So, especially on a wet day like today, you shouldn't feel too bad about indulging.